It's like, oh, you're making movies. Oh, that's an easy job. And you're like, no.
It's not easy.
It's not easy at all.
It's fun, but it's... Yeah. Here's how I like to call it. It's fun, but it's fun mixed with utter panic.
Hi, and welcome to the episode of Cinema Nation. I am Brandon Sparks, and I'm alone again for this intro, for this interview I did a few weeks back when I was still in Los Angeles. I'm actually currently on this long prep time, pre-production, and almost vacation for a film I'm doing in my hometown of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And so I'm here in this humid weather that I'm not used to, and so I'm having to get used to this. What I grew up around was this hot, humid weather where I sweat anytime I walk outside. But yeah, and Thomas Horton, fellow podcaster and classmate, will be producing the film. And so, yeah, it's been busy with that, and everyone's been busy with work and families. And so hopefully we'll have everybody together at some point. Will, Anna, Ben, Hunter, Thomas, all been busy and all in different time zones. So hopefully we'll have something soon. But yeah, so with this episode, I sat down with Marcus Cheval. He is a film composer in Los Angeles, and I met him through Erica Griffin. And if you guys pay attention to the show, Erica came on, and we talked about SAG-AFTRA Foundation, which is where she works. And she introduced me to Marcus. He's a great guy. I want to talk to him on the show. He's done a number of things. He's been a film composer. He's a film composer, and he's a film orchestrator. He's worked on a lot, an orchestrator for Ride Along 2, Gallivant, Agent Carter, some of the recent stuff. He's composed a number of films and TV movies, and he talks about that in the show. But he was a great guy to talk with, very knowledgeable. And I didn't know much about film going into or film composing going into this, so it was a fun experience for me and a great learning experience. He's very knowledgeable about film composing, also too, because we're in Los Angeles, and it was like when we were doing the interview, it was like hotter than it usually is in Los Angeles. So we have like a fan going in the background, so if the sound's not perfect, that's because we were hot and the windows were closed and we needed a fan. But it was a great interview, and I hope you enjoy this with Marcus Cheval. Also, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, we're on we're a Cine Nation podcast, and on Twitter we're at Cine Nation Show. Make sure you subscribe and give us reviews and ratings on iTunes. We'd like to hear what you guys have to say about the show. We'll make it better. Also, make sure you follow us on Medium. That's where we have a lot of great stuff on there right now, from like Sean Randall, Will Clayton, Alex Bauer, Wynn Powers just did an Eddie Murphy piece a few weeks back. But yeah, Will has his new review on Neon Demon that just came out. Sean Randall's about to do a study on feminism and Disney animated films, so get ready for that. He's going through all the Disney catalog. Alex Bauer just did a thing on Buster Keaton. We have a lot of great stuff up there. Check it out. And also, too, if you want to be a writer, we want to hear what people have to say, and we want you guys to become writers if you're a listener. All you have to do is join Medium. It's free. Start an account and write something about film or television, about entertainment, and send it to us. We'll read it if we like it, which we usually like anything people send us. We'll publish it and put it on our Medium page. So if you're interested, it's very simple. Just sign up on Medium and send the stuff you do to us. But yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode that I did with Marcus Cheval, and we hope you continue to listen to more episodes we release periodically. So how's your day been so far?
My day has been good. I took a walk to the playground with my son,
mm-hmm.
and we had fun, and then that's pretty much all I've gotten done today.
Have you been busy with work lately at all?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been working on orchestration,
mm-hmm.
for a couple of projects. Ballerina, which is... an animated movie,
mm-hmm.
and it's got the score, the composer is Klaus Badelt,
mm-hmm.
and the other movie is Bad Moms,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a pop rock,
mm-hmm.
score,
yeah,
with some strings on top.
Very different. So those are two very different style of movies, I feel. And what's your approach to that, or you're orchestrating it, right? Are there differences between orchestrating a like Klaus Bledet, is that how you pronounce the name, that type of score to a kind of comedy like rock thing?
The instrumentation is
mm-hmm.
is very different.
Mm-hmm.
The ballerina score is for full symphonic orchestra.
Uh-huh.
So it has strings and woodwinds and brass and percussion, and it may have some pre-records which are programmed, which will stay in, possibly. I'm not even sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of Bad Moms, Christopher Leonard's score, that is the main part of that is the rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically kind of like sweetening with strings on top.
Okay.
No woodwinds, no brass, no percussion, like orchestral percussion like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, a lot of the material that I'm given, I actually have to transcribe because
okay.
the composer will actually be sitting there and recording guitar or whatever live. So
uh-huh.
I don't get any MIDI information that I can translate into notation.
Okay.
So I have to actually transcribe by ear what I'm hearing.
Wow.
And then put that on paper.
How difficult is that?
I see.
I don't know music that well, so I just like to me, I was like, that sounds crazy.
It's a kind of a thing of its own. I mean, a lot of musicians don't necessarily need to do a lot of transcription in their daily life. I have done a lot of
mm-hmm.
transcription over the years,
mm-hmm.
and so it's not a matter of difficult for me. It's a matter of how time-consuming it's going to be. And
gotcha.
Something that's very dense and has a lot of things going on at the same time can take longer to transcribe than something that's just piano
or
the voice or something like that, you know?
Okay. Okay, so you're from Sweden, and then, so when did you come to America? When did that happen?
Well, I went to, as soon as I finished high school in Sweden,
mm-hmm.
I took a year off. It was supposed to be a year off. And I went to Luther College in Decorah, Iowa.
Okay.
And I went there to do music for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then intending to go back to Sweden to study engineering, you know, math and physics, probably end up an architect or civil engineer or something like that. But during that year in Iowa is when I kind of snapped and I decided that I needed to continue on the path of music 100%. I then actually had to go back to Sweden to
mm-hmm.
do military service for a year.
Oh, wow.
Which I kind of tried to get out of, but they weren't having it. So, during that year, though, I applied to Berklee College of Music in Boston,
mm-hmm.
and the following year, I started my bachelor there, Bachelor of Music, and my major was called Contemporary Writing and Production,
mm-hmm.
and sort of a year into it, I realized that film music specifically was probably where I was gonna
mm-hmm.
veer toward, but I actually think that the contemporary writing and production major was great for me because I got to explore lots of styles and
mm-hmm.
do lots of arranging from big band to all kinds of
oh,
stuff,
wow.
Jingle writing, film stuff,
mm-hmm.
and whatever. So, and I took a lot of classes from the film major as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it prepared me pretty well for moving out here.
Yeah. So why film music? Because that's, some people, they might go to, like, a place in New York and try, or in certain cities and become more involved in, like, a symphony or something. Why film music for you?
I didn't want to I didn't want to go into a life of academia.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be creating music
mm-hmm.
for a living. Just looking at different careers, it seemed that film music was a world that could allow for me to actually be making music in one form or another and be making a living,
mm-hmm.
and specifically here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that that was
mm-hmm.
true. I don't think that there's a lot of places, physical places in the world where you can go to and work hard and get to mm-hmm. that. I think that there are people who make music for a living in lots of places in the world,
mm-hmm.
but it's a lot harder to kind of iron that out in Europe or in other places. So,
So when did you move out to Los Angeles?
Right after I graduated from Berklee College of Music mm-hmm. in 2002.
And so what was the first step when you got out here? Like,
find a place to live. I did not have anything lined up work-wise.
Uh-huh.
So I was pretty screwed. I moved out with three other friends from Berklee.
Okay.
One other friend was also into film music, and the other two were, one was a songwriter and the other a rock drummer.
Oh, wow.
So we all moved out here and we rented a house together in Mid-Wilshire area.
Okay.
Which turned out to be mm-hmm. a repossessed crack house, and it was... And, you know, during the hot summer months, I started smelling urine coming out of the vents.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Anyway.
You're saying it used to be a crack house, or it was a crack house when you were living there?
Yeah, we brought the crack. The woman who had, I'm telling wild stories here, but the woman who rented it to us had bought it cheaply. Because it had recently been a crack house.
Oh, wow.
And she had not done enough to get it back to where it needed to be for mm-hmm. renting, you know? So we took her to court and everything, and we were out of there. It was terrible. The court even had to, like, freeze her bank account to get our security deposit out.
Oh, wow.
Because she refused to comply.
So you weren't there long, is what you're saying?
No, 6 months.
6 months, okay.
And then and alongside of this, mm-hmm. I also proposed to Rebecca, and
mm-hmm.
we went to Sweden for Christmas, and then after that, because we had been dating in Boston, and so we lived in, you know, long distance for 6 months, and we decided that, or she decided that she wanted to come out here, and for us to...
she decided we're getting married.
She
That's
decided
what
that that she was going to grace me with her presence here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. And I found this place, apartment, which we are still in,
mm-hmm.
which has been very good to us for many years.
Yeah.
But now that we have this little kid, it's starting to get a little small.
Oh, gotcha. We have a guy on our podcast who's the same way. When he had his kid, he was the same way. He had to, like... Okay, we have a kid now. What we need to do? And a little apartment doesn't always work, especially as he got older.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we can't. We can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So came out here in LA. What was your first job? I guess like how did you get your first job? Because coming out here with no connections can seem mm-hmm. very. Especially what year did you come out?
2002.
Okay, so. Technology in the world was vastly different a little bit compared. 14. Oh, it's like,
oh,
that,
my goodness.
I don't mean it in a bad way, but it's like nowadays with jobs, like
right. It was different.
It's like, so I feel like it'd be more difficult then in a way than it is now.
Because
like nowadays you can look on Facebook and there's there's groups and stuff
for
jobs.
You're right. It was Facebook didn't exist.
Sorry for dating you that much.
No, it's terrible how old I am. I really don't feel like that, but these, you know, 13, 14 years that I've been out here have
mm-hmm.
whizzed by very quickly. So my first job was actually with, was teaching music
mm-hmm.
in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
To little kids, I think it was K through 5,
mm-hmm.
and it was down in South Central and, you know, East LA, these places, and it was me and another guy, and we were working for this organization called Sound Art, which was is probably still a nonprofit
mm-hmm.
organization. Basically, we did drum circles with these kids and just had fun making simple music with them, in the afternoons, kind of a way to keep them off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first job out here in LA after a few months of having mm-hmm. been out here. And after a few months of having worked that job, I responded to a Craigslist ad, I think it was.
So Craigslist was around then?
No, I don't know if it was Craigslist. Yeah, Craigslist was definitely around. It might have been a Film Music Network. That's mm-hmm. probably what it was. A Film Music Network ad for an A-list composer looking mm-hmm. for interns.
Mm-hmm.
And that A-list composer turned out to be Hans Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing an internship there for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
With his main technical assistant at the time,
mm-hmm.
who is now a big composer himself, Trevor Morris.
Oh, wow.
And so I was there for a few months, and then I ended up working for another composer,
mm-hmm.
Steve Edwards,
mm-hmm.
Who has done lots of movies as well. And I stayed there for a bit longer. I ended up doing a lot of arranging and orchestration work for him,
mm-hmm.
some writing as well. He's got a music library, if you know what a music library
mm-hmm.
is. Probably a lot of people know what those are. So he's got a music library, and I wrote a good chunk of music for that library as well.
Okay.
But I did. He did a lot of big band music.
Okay.
And so coming from Berklee, which is a
yeah.
jazz school originally, I had done a good chunk of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, and I was a whiz with the Finale music notation software.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing a lot of that kind of stuff for him.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're working under those people. How long did you work? Like, are you freelance now, or do you work with certain people again? Cause, or when did that transition, I guess? Because you're working with someone, then you became
right.
freelance.
Okay, so at that point, I was an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I ended up doing some work for that guy that was sort of more like a freelance kind of situation. But I ended up actually in 2005 winning a competition, Turner Classic Movies Young Film Composers Competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that landed me my first feature film.
Okay.
The grand prize winner got to score an old silent movie, basically, that they wanted to put on TV, but they couldn't because it didn't have...
It had score.
It didn't have a score, right?
Wow, okay.
So, because back in the 20s, they used to actually have a live organist
or yeah.
something like that, or sometimes for the fancier ones, they had a little string section or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But
and so that had been lost essentially, and then
yeah, they couldn't record audio
at the time,
or they couldn't synchronize audio and picture
yeah, yeah.
at the time. So they just had these film reels, and then that would be accompanied by like a book of
mm-hmm.
notation, basically. Or if there wasn't anything specifically written for that movie, and the,
oh, wow.
the organist would just okay, this
figure
movie,
it out.
This movie needs this sort of
oh, wow.
sort of music, and so he would go through his, you know, standards.
Mm-hmm. Book. Oh, and then just like follow this to a T.
Yeah, and improvise a lot.
Okay.
You know.
Wow,
yeah.
I never knew that. So you got that, and so you got a feature.
That was my first feature, and sort of. Around the same time, I started working for a company, technically as a freelancer,
mm-hmm.
but because it's project by project basis,
yeah.
A music prep house, a music copying house.
Okay.
So because, like I said, I was good with the annotation software, I started doing these jobs where I would extract parts
mm-hmm.
For the individual players from these scores.
Okay.
So now these were projects that were big movies, and they were union projects, and so I got paid well, and I got also in on the back end, mm-hmm. because the union projects have this special payments mm-hmm. fund, the film musicians special payments fund, and basically you get payments the next following year mm-hmm. based on how well the movie did, and then the following year again and again, depending on how well the movie keeps mm-hmm. doing. And so that job, that was with a company called Stephen Giuliani Music,
mm-hmm.
and that job served me quite well. I worked there for quite a few years, while also kind of doing my own composing jobs on the side.
Yeah.
And a lot of the composing work that I did and still am doing is on teams.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a lead composer, and then there'll be maybe two or three other guys who mm-hmm. are helping out to put the score together in quick time.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times there's not a lot of time to put these scores together. And so, to answer your question, pretty much all of it is freelance.
Uh-huh.
I rarely get W-2
mm-hmm.
Payments.
Okay.
It
was because of that competition is what kind of helped you get into that, I guess, tier.
Yeah, I would say that the competition definitely helped me get past that catch-22 we are not gonna give you. I mean, this is kind of a side point to the music prep and mm-hmm. the orchestration work. I'm sure people knowing that I have that in my back pocket is not gonna hurt, you know, any kind of music work, but when it comes to me composing for movies, that certainly helped
with that
so mm-hmm. that, you know, people are not going to hire you for a movie mm-hmm. if they don't believe that you can score a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, how do you know that unless you've done one? So
that gave you that
experience. Yeah, I gave you my first movie, and it was... a trial by fire, because it was 91 or 92 minutes of music.
All music. That's the
and it was all
movie's
music.
The movie's all music.
The movie was 92 minutes long, and there was 92 minutes of music. Because there was no other sound, you know?
Yeah.
There's no dialogue, no sound effects, nothing. So I had to play the score, but mm-hmm. I also... That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
I had to play the score, but I also had to play the sound effects in certain places where, you know, there was obvious...
Yeah.
Obviously something happening that should have a loud sound of something,
mm-hmm.
Then I would do something
with
in music,
music yeah.
that would be in instead of that. And also the dialogue, I would try to play the dialogue with instruments, you know, playing back and forth
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
So is your approach different when you're doing a silent film compared to a, or what, like how is your approach different?
Very much. In a regular movie mm-hmm. that has a soundtrack, you know, with dialogue and sound effects, I have to basically just duck everything and try to play straight into the subconscious without sticking out too much. Usually, in most scenes,
mm-hmm.
Certainly in a scene where there's no dialogue and you have a big, you know, helicopter shot of something, then the music really should come out and do something. I can go completely with a particular flavor that I think is right for the scene. Don't have to worry about sound effects. In fact, I might want to duck for certain sound effects
mm-hmm.
because if the music sticks out in the same place
mm-hmm.
as there is a sound effect, then you can bet that they're going to turn down the music to let the sound effect come out more, you know?
And so you want to control that in a way.
Yeah, I want to protect myself from being turned down.
You want to do it yourself. Don't turn me down. Exactly. I'm doing this myself.
Exactly. So, and it goes the same with dialogue. You know, play around the dialogue. And that's the good, great thing about the sequencer is everything is completely synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that you can play this piano note and have it be heard. And then the next millisecond, you can be out, and there's a line that's happening there in the dialogue, and it's not going to bother the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really do a lot of that kind of thing, as long as it still makes musical sense, you know, and whatever. But
and so now a lot of stuff you do is orchestration, correct? You're an orchestrator.
Yes, I am an orchestrator. But I'm also composing a lot.
Yeah, so you do both.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You know, I'm known by some people as a composer, mm-hmm. and by a lot of people probably as an orchestrator. Mm-hmm. They might not know that I'm doing a lot of composing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the work I do is orchestration for, you know, more famous movies that a lot of the population will hear about probably.
Yeah.
And then the movies that I tend to work on, a lot of it is like TV movies, mm-hmm. and
that you compose.
Movies that I compose for, mm-hmm. yeah. Some of them I'm the main composer,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the movies that I'm composing on, I'm working on teams.
Gotcha.
So I'm grateful that I have kept composing throughout the years, you know, because a lot of people can fall into a pit and they don't end up doing what they originally wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I still am doing a lot of composing. And so I feel like I feel in my heart that I'm a composer.
Yeah.
You know?
So when it comes to a music crew, you have the composer, what are the type of jobs that are in there? So like orchestrator is kind of one in a way with music crew. And so what are they?
So on the music team, you'll have, outside of the composer and down, if we want to call it that,
yeah.
I don't know a lot. I mean, there's the music supervisor who works with the studio,
mm-hmm.
And there's the music editor who works closely with
the sound,
the composer, mm-hmm. and with the, also with the, maybe a studio person. That's my ignorance right there. And then we have the composer, who is going to be on the name, mm-hmm. Name on the movie. And sometimes not, the composer has a team of guys and girls who work with him,
mm-hmm.
who he may have programmed some of his music.
Mm-hmm.
Like they might be doing, taking, you know, a cue from one part of the movie and adjusting it to mm-hmm. fit into another part of the movie because that is the same type of scene, it has the same characters,
yeah.
or it needs the same type of music, or thematically it should match,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so that may be all done by the main composer himself,
mm-hmm.
or it may be partially done by a crew,
mm-hmm.
you know. That can be called programming or arranging or, you know,
mm-hmm.
and in some cases, the schedule might be so crazy that the composer doesn't even necessarily have time to develop all these themes
mm-hmm.
in advance. And it becomes more of, let's just write to these scenes now. We'll figure it out as we go along.
Yeah.
That sometimes happens,
mm-hmm.
And in those cases, basically the crew, they're composing.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully in that case, they end up getting put on the cue sheet,
mm-hmm.
Along with the main composer,
mm-hmm.
Which means that they'll end up getting royalties and that kind of thing. So that's still in the composing department. Now the composer and his crew will deliver demos to the director, mm-hmm. directors, and producers, those will be signed off on, and then if there is an orchestra budget or a, you know, live element budget mm-hmm. on the movie, then from that point, these cues that have been approved by the studio will be sent to orchestration.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another job, which mm-hmm. is what I do a lot of. And that means taking the raw material from the composer. Now, if you're listening to the demo, that might sound, wow, I can't, you know, this sounds great. You know, I don't know that it needs to be, you know, why do we need to do anything?
Why
do we
do it again? Why are we paying for this?
Right. And, those are all programmed or, you know, scratch guitars or whatever by the composer. That needs to be translated, sometimes transcribed, mm-hmm. Into notation, on a score page. And in the case of orchestra, needs to be balanced and, made sure that, you know, it might mean that you have to revoice certain things in the strings,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes add colors in the woodwinds or whatever to kind of add to the orchestral sound.
Mm-hmm. So you have some sort of creative.
It's certainly a pretty creative job. I feel as an orchestrator, and it's really nice to hear when you're going to the scoring session and you're hearing those pieces being recorded live by these awesome musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from the orchestration step, there's the music preparation
mm-hmm.
Step, and that's kind of where I started after having worked as an assistant.
Yeah.
That's not very creative job. That is more of a mechanical, but it is a grueling job
mm-hmm.
because if you take a movie and you might have 50 cues, maybe not, maybe 40 cues, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Varying length. And then you have a full orchestra. So take 40 cues times, you know, 40 parts or something, or 30 parts,
mm-hmm.
you end up with a lot of parts, and each part might have a couple of pages at least.
Yeah.
In some cases for a big action cue, you might have a violin part that's, you know, 9 pages
mm-hmm.
or something like that. So all that stuff has to be extracted
yeah.
and laid out in a way that page turns are possible,
mm-hmm.
and then printed, taped.
Mm-hmm.
And for the strings, you also have, you know, on the score, it's one violin, one part.
Oh, wow.
But when you print it, you have to print it times however many stands for strings, for violins you have. And so you have, let's say you have a big string section, you might have, you know, 10 violin stands or 15 violin stands. So it just multiplies
it's
like
so
crazy.
Much.
So, you know, the people who
music
are
preparation.
Taping, yeah, these things will, you know, a lot of times these things will be going through the night, you know,
oh, wow.
towards the end
for
of
the next,
project.
So to prep for the next day, is that what you're saying? Or
to prep, so let's say you have, you know, Monday downbeat for recording.
Mm-hmm.
You might be getting cues from the orchestrators into the music prep department all the way down until the afternoon or evening
mm-hmm.
before the recording session. And so the music prep department are, you know, frenetically just getting this stuff cranked out and proofread. Because if you have notes that are wrong, I mean, there are things that can go wrong
mm-hmm.
when you extract a part
yeah,
from a score to a part, you know? So you know, everything has to be correct or else, it's gonna look very bad on the scoring stage.
Mm.
So, anyway.
So, how much time as a composer? How much time do you have usually, like from when you come on the project to when you finish? How long is it usually for everything?
It can vary quite a bit. I would say anything from a couple of months, maybe, to, you know, 2-3 weeks.
What's the shortest time you've had?
I've been on TV movies where, you know, we've cranked out the score in like a week and a half. And then, of course, you know, there's no time to do anything live.
Yeah.
Because that would suck up, you know, 3-4 days just to try to get that part of it done. But everything then has to be, you know, the demos have to sound good enough for broadcast.
For broadcast.
There might not even be time to stem out.
Oh, wow.
You know what that means? Like, when you deliver music to the dubbing stage, a lot of times you'll separate out parts of the mix. So you'll have, let's say, long strings and short strings. You might have percussion. You might have brass separated out so that in the dub, they can place those four tracks, and then if there's something that they want to lower,
they can bring that one thing down.
They can bring only that element down so that they don't have to bring out down the whole music mix.
And so certain people don't put they're all together, is what you're saying?
Well, in certain cases, there isn't time necessarily, or, you know, but that's unfortunate because that can be detrimental to to a moment in the score. So we always try to do that. But
So you've done kind of television and film, both composing and orchestration. What's the difference between doing TV and film nowadays, or is there a difference?
I haven't composed for a TV show.
Okay.
So I've composed for TV movies. And I guess the only difference between that and, let's say, an independent movie or something that might be going to theaters, hopefully, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably the time crunch usually tends to be heavier on the TV movies because it's usually,
up until broadcast almost.
Almost.
Yeah. Especially with digital nowadays, like you.
Yeah, exactly. Things get worked on parallel, and then okay,
we go live an hour, guys. We gotta finish this.
So, I have orchestrated for TV. The first thing was Revolution, which
I think that Jon Favreau.
Right.
Yeah, he directed
TV,
the first episode.
Action drama
on NBC.
Yeah.
Formerly on NBC.
And that was the first TV show. This is with Chris Leonard as the main composer. I've been doing a lot of work with him. He's a great guy to work for. And he's doing a lot of exciting projects, so that's cool. And then the other two shows that I've orchestrated for TV with him is Gallivant, which is a musical comedy. Had two seasons.
Like medieval.
It's kind of like
Monty Python.
It's Monty Python,
Holy Grail.
Mixed with a Princess Bride and musical.
It was on ABC, right?
That was on ABC. That had two seasons. Did I already say that?
Yeah. And then you also did Agent Carter.
And Agent Carter, also two seasons.
Which people believe there should be a third season for that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for both these two recent shows, I would love to have another season. I think that a lot of people are still really loving, a lot of fans for the Gallivant and the Agent Carter. Yeah, there are petitions and everything for Agent Carter to be renewed. Agent Carter was a lot of fun to be working on. The orchestral palette was really kind of interesting, and we got to do a lot of fun colors with the low woodwinds, for instance, and a lot of mutes in the brass.
Yeah.
It's got a film noir
does,
kind of feel, and that was brought into the music, mixed kind of with the superhero element. So that was a lot of fun.
And so for that, because it's how many episodes per season was that? Like 9 or 10? I can't remember how much it was.
No, was I think
more?
It was more.
Or more was
let
actually.
Me, let me check real quick.
You're fine.
No, you're right. Gallivant was 8. And then 10, the second season, I think. And then Carter, 8. First season, I think.
And then 10 the next.
I think it might have been 10 the second season.
So it was 18 for both shows. So
right.
Because they were both were kind of... I know when Agent Carter came out, it was kind of a limited series of, like, will it get picked up again for second season or what?
Right.
And
it certainly was the same for Gallivant.
Mm-hmm.
Gallivant, we did sort of... chunks of recording, so we did like 3-4 episodes.
Yes,
in
I was gonna ask, yeah.
And then 3-4 more.
With Carter, it was.
With Carter, it was. I think maybe we did 2 episodes together the first, and then it went to 1 per week.
Okay.
After that.
Okay.
So that meant, you know, a couple of days off after
doing
recording,
2, yeah.
And then, you know, 4 or 5 days of pretty grueling.
That's what I was going to ask next.
Pretty grueling work after that.
And so is that Monday through Friday, weekends included sometimes, or is that...
What's a weekend?
I know, that's what I was going to say. In this business, I have some friends that are like, oh, I want to just get a 9-to-5 job. And LA, I was like, well, what is that? Like, that's not... In Los Angeles and Hollywood, that's not really existent.
My life really doesn't... have weekends. It's on or off.
Gotcha.
And, you know...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think I'm probably... My my body, I would like to say, can handle it pretty well, although not quite as well as, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, I think it would be quite stressful for, and they, I mean, it is stressful for me too, but I can handle the stress pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, my wife has, you know, seen what I go through, and she's like, I could never, ever do that. I would not put my body through that.
That's something I think with film, people kind of don't realize how hard it can be to sustain, like, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're making movies. Oh, that's an easy job. And you're like, no.
It's not easy.
It's not easy at all.
It's fun, but it's...
Yeah.
Here's how I like to call it. It's fun, but it's fun mixed with utter panic.
It's fun. That sums it up pretty well.
That's how I feel about it. It's like, I would love to really enjoy this right now because it's awesome, but... I can't because
I have a deadline.
Oh,
I have a deadline to make.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh man. I so many memories just came back of you saying like, "Yep, I was in a panic." It was fun looking back on it, but man, was I in a panic when that happened.
Yeah. And then after you've, you know, slept a little bit and you look at what you did and you're like, "Oh my god. That's
pretty
amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
It's pretty great.
What
we did. We did it in that amount of time. That's insane."
Yeah. So that's And that's you know, where you feel like it's really rewarding.
Yeah.
But it is grueling.
Yeah.
It really is grueling.
And depending on what job you're in, can also be very isolating sometimes.
I think that, I think it was Hans Zimmer who said, this was, when I did the film composers competition, Hans Zimmer was the, was my assigned mentor for the work on my feature. But during the finals, we were all interviewed, and Hans was interviewed as well, and he said then, which has stuck with me, that being a composer is one of the loneliest jobs, because you're stuck in your room, which I like to call my dungeon.
Which we're in right now.
And you just have to knock out all these notes, and you have, you know, these weeks or whatever to mm-hmm. do it, and you know, you can't really go out and socialize because those are precious hours that yeah. you need to
yeah, yeah.
to fill this void of the silence in the movie.
And I think it'll be said for a lot of positions when it comes to film.
Probably,
it's
yeah.
like, because I've heard that also, too, with writing, just screenwriting.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then also, the difference is you're probably going to go crazy because you have so many voices in your head from trying to come up with stuff. So you aren't talking to people, you're just going insane as you're
right.
doing it. And editing as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're sitting in a dark room mm-hmm. and just watching the same thing over and over and over again.
Yep. And with a tiny, tiny little difference.
It's like a difference
like,
every time.
Or not.
And you get to a point where you're just like, I don't know what's right anymore.
Yep.
That happens to me when I'm making films and we're editing. I have to walk away from it for some... And same with screenwriting. I have to walk away from it for a bit because sometimes you just don't know anymore.
Yep.
It's like, you're like, is this... Am I hurting it or am I helping it?
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to take a step back, maybe for a day or two, if you have time, a week.
Yeah.
Which you usually don't. But, and figure out, hey, okay, this works. Okay, this does work. Or,
yeah.
what was I thinking when I made this decision?
Or, there really was no difference between those two options. So, why did I
spend so much time? Why did I waste my time doing that?
Yeah, so, in the case of the composer, maybe if you're coming to that point with a particular cue, you know, maybe you can put that particular cue on hold
yeah.
and work on another part of the movie when
yeah.
which doesn't relate as much to that
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And that could probably help to get a little distance mm-hmm. because you probably shouldn't be going out golfing. But maybe that's probably what... Maybe that is what you should do.
Yes, we should. Well, we had a guy that we interviewed, Adam Salke. He's a director, and he talked about how a lot of people... He said, you talked about this article, and he was also my professor, and he talked about this in class,
mm-hmm.
about how some successful people, they'll work for like 90 minutes... They'll take some sort of break, like go for a run or,
mm-hmm.
or get a snack or go make a phone call real quick that's like personal and then do another 90 minutes and then 9 minutes later do the same thing. So you're putting in like solid 90 minutes of work, no phone, nothing, just...
That sounds very healthy. Yeah, that sounds very healthy.
You're just like, I wish I could do that.
That'd be great. Wish I could do that. Yeah. You know, if I had a different situation where, you know,
yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
didn't just have this one thin door separating me from my
yeah.
son and the mayhem that's going on outside.
Yeah.
Maybe
I could do that.
Maybe I could do that if I had, if I was renting a studio space
yeah, yeah,
somewhere
yeah.
or whatever. Or, you know, like some people have, if they have a house, they
yeah,
might
yeah.
have a rebuilt garage or something like that
yeah,
as
yeah.
their studio. That's a really nice situation, which I would love to have. yeah. And I will take breaks.
Yeah.
But it depends on how intense the panic is.
Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah. It's certainly healthy. And that, you know, I'll take breaks for meals.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. yeah.
I'll,
you have to
I'll
do that.
Really enjoy the meal. I'll,
mm-hmm.
you know, go out and have a meal with a friend or something like that as my social interaction.
Actually, this
and,
is my prize
know.
For the day.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned your family a lot, and this is a question I think a lot of people don't talk about, is how do you work in a business like this and have a family life? Like, how do you keep that? Is that too personal of a question to ask? It's like, because it can be a difficult, that's the thing I hear a lot of people is it's difficult to have both. And so how do you handle that?
I just wing it. We just wing it. in the beginning especially, I felt like I had no idea how I could continue to do, you know, to write for a movie and be a dad,
mm-hmm.
or how I could be on an intense orchestration project and still be a dad. But you're forced to because and it just, it goes, it negatively impacts the family life, no matter how you turn it,
yeah.
when you're on an intense, intense project.
Yeah.
But you try to make up for it when you're off the project.
Yeah.
And it's been like that for Rebecca and me, that it's, you know, we're even before Yossi joined us,
mm-hmm.
You know, she would have an intense part,
yeah.
period with work, and I would, you know, try to take care of things at home a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be in an intense period and she would take care of things. And it's the same with him. It is harder.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but you find time somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and you realize that there were moments that you were spending when you didn't have a kid,
mm-hmm.
that you didn't need to spend,
yeah.
doing whatever you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is still time to eke out of your day to, you know, to fill it in to both work and,
mm-hmm.
and with the
it has to be a priority.
Yeah. I don't have a good answer, to be honest.
No, it's a tough question. I've heard a lot of people talk, because it's very, I think, honest question that not everyone talks about. It's like, oh, film industry is great, but it can be,
yeah,
it's hard to choose. Sometimes you have to choose between,
yeah,
family life and your personal or in your professional life, and how to balance the two. Because
yeah.
I remember I was at a film festival one time, and Bruce Dern was talking, and someone asked him, like, how do you balance, like, how do you have two parents, because him and his ex-wife were both actors, and then his
mm-hmm.
daughter Laura Dern is an actress,
mm-hmm.
and then they asked, like, how do you manage that? He goes, you don't. He goes, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, because what's happening is, if you have a kid and you're married to another actress, or you're married to another actor as well, you are, if you're working, that person's like, why can't I work? Like, why am I the one taking care of the kid? You should be taking care of the kid, and I should go to work.
Right.
And it's hard to balance the two.
Yeah.
So, because someone's always focused on their career and not the family. And he was
yeah.
like, it's hard. It's possible, but very, very hard to do in
yeah.
this business.
I would say that unless you have a very, very, very solid foundation
mm-hmm.
in your relationship,
mm-hmm.
this is exactly the kind of thing that is very easily going to tear people apart.
Yeah.
You know? And fortunately, we have had many years together
mm-hmm.
before we got UC.
Yeah.
And part of the reason we haven't had a kid sooner is because we were scared to death of this exact
of the
situation.
Question I'm asking
yeah.
is,
it's, you know, we knew that it was going to be so
yeah.
hard, but, you know, after 11, 12 years together being selfish and doing
mm-hmm.
our own thing, we finally felt like, isn't there more to life
yeah.
than our careers? And turns out that that this amazing kid was
mm-hmm.
the answer to that. But yeah, it is really hard, and it can certainly be source of tension,
mm-hmm.
and but you just have to figure it out. You just
mm-hmm.
have to try to compromise and not be selfish, or, you know, try to
balance it.
Balance it
yeah.
out after, you know, one person gets to be selfish for a little while, and then the other.
Now it's my turn to be selfish.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
No, but it really is,
yeah,
is
yeah.
that way, I think.
It's I mean, it's a partnership, and it's communication, I guess, with that.
And in some cases, you know, if you're a successful businessman,
mm-hmm.
you can have your operation be a little bit more autonomous, or
yeah,
a
yeah.
lot of the work can maybe be done by people who work for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have that situation here.
Not yet.
But yeah, so
mm-hmm.
so it depends on your situation
yeah.
and where you come from and
okay.
what you're doing.
And then yeah, my last question that we always ask everyone, and we'll see how you want to answer it. What are your top five favorite films?
Top five. Okay. this may take a little while.
Or you can pick five you just really, really like if you can't do top
five. So, I love The Deer Hunter.
Okay. It's a great movie. At least I think it is.
I think so. The Mission.
Okay.
Love that movie. And I particularly love that score.
Mm-hmm.
Morricone. It's just haunting,
that's
unique,
amazing
score.
That's two De Niro films.
Ah, that's true. Oops.
No, it's fine.
I was going to go for a third.
Go for your third.
Well, Godfather 2, maybe?
Yeah. He's in that too.
Yeah, I know he is. Oh, goodness. Swedish movie. Mitt Livsom Hund.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing movie. Do you know that movie?
I do not.
My Life as a Dog. Lasse Hallström.
I've heard of it. I've not seen it. So yeah, one more. Your final one.
Yeah, I should have this down because there's. I'm sure I've stepped over several.
I haven't. Every person I ask this, they're just like, "Why did you ask this question?" But I think it's a good thing to know. Because they're just like, "Oh, I don't have this written out." I've heard a lot of interesting answers too.
Well, I love the Lord of the Rings movies
mm-hmm.
very much.
So just count that as one.
If that's okay.
You can count it as one. If you count it as one, that's fine. You have to pick your favorite. Those. What is your favorite of those three? I'll count that as one. But you
probably the first.
Okay.
I just adore the music
mm-hmm.
for those movies, as well as just the sheer enormity of design and everything, and just everything is perfect.
Yeah,
I feel, you know.
And yeah, they're extravagant, like epic.
Yeah.
Movies, like all of them are. But yeah, and then also I was gonna ask this real quick before you also did Sausage Party as well.
Yes.
Coming out, right? What was that experience like with that one?
Exciting. The movie I think is gonna turn a few heads. I think it's a really hilarious movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's most likely going to be people offended by it.
I mean, it's Seth Rogen and those guys. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's going to happen.
You know, it's all the stereotypical, you know, ethnic things. And there's a lot of sexual innuendo and quite graphic things, but it's animated, so it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter at all. It's something new.
And, you know, it's rated R, so people should be okay.
Okay.
The music, I feel, is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Leonard's has done an amazing job with the score.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very proud of the work that I did on the music there. Some really big orchestral extravagant
for that, you know, film.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's, you've got animation, which, you know, you can do a lot.
Yeah.
Exciting things in the music. You've got all this action type stuff happening in the movie and chases and all this kind of stuff. So there's all these ingredients for a outrageous big orchestral score.
I love that trailer so much.
Yeah.
They're children. She's eating children.
Yep. Yeah. No. I'm
really excited to see that, and I just wanted to bring that up. So yeah, make sure you go see Sausage Party when it comes out. It comes out in July. Is it July? Or it's coming out this summer, I know. I can't know. It's fine.
This summer.
Being it's coming this summer.
It's coming out this summer, and it's, I have a feeling it's going to be pretty popular. Yeah. And I'm happy to have been part of that movie.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it for coming on and talking to us. Or talking
thank
to me.
Thank you very much for talking to me. this has been fun.